Welcome to Bengals Scribe Session, presented by JosephOtto.com and Inquirer Sports. Here, your Bengals beat writers Paul Daner Jr. and Richard Skinner escort you inside the walls of Paul Brown Stadium to hear the news, analysis, and observations unfolding within the team from those documenting it daily. All with the sidecar of snark and absurdity you've come to expect. Let's go. We're about to start a party in here. He's made strums and guitar in here. Looks like we got a good crowd here. Turn it up to 10 and get lively.
Ball is out. The Bengals have scooped it up. Terrence Newman running back to the 30, 20, 10, 5, touchdown. Up in the air. AJ Green makes the catch.
Oh man!
A deflected ball winds up in the hands of AJ Green and the clock hits zero.
It's about to get rowdy here, but if you want to fight, get out of here.
All right, welcome to the latest edition of Scribe Session. I'm Paul Jr. here with the beat writer Richard Skinner.
Skinny!
What's up?
I kind of like Mondays. You know why?
Do you?
Sundays are
Has anyone ever said that?
I know, but the only reason I say that is Sundays are so hectic for both of us.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, when you sit down at the stadium at 11 a.m. or thereabouts, you literally don't get up to do anything other than work or go ask questions for about the next 10 hours.
Yeah.
I'm not complaining. Look, I'm not digging a ditch, and I'm not doing something I don't enjoy doing, but it is just... It's just intense. And then Monday is just kind of a little more laid back, and you're kind of getting a chance to sleep in a little bit, all that, although I got up at 5 o'clock this morning. But anyway, it's just a more laid-back day.
Yeah, it is a more laid-back day. And it's
for
a lot,
us, anyway.
For us. And typically, I would say it's a lot easier coming off a win, Bengals 24, Falcons 10.
You would think that.
You would think it would be, but It just wasn't, and it really typically isn't. We got the today Marvin Lewis with a press conference, and well, he was in a great mood.
Surly doesn't quite describe it. He just
uninterested.
Yes,
just kind of sick of
yes.
our faces, probably.
Yeah, although I'm not sure what we did, but you know, we're just the friendly neighborhood scribes for
yeah.
goodness sakes.
Yeah,
and look, he's obviously dealing with injury issues that we're not going to know fully about until Wednesday or and beyond. And I'm sure, right or wrong, that's got to be weighing on his mind because he had some significant guys go down yesterday. We'll talk about later on.
Yeah, and he's not really one to.
He doesn't enjoy these sessions.
No, he doesn't. As he's often said, if he was allowed to, he would build a moat around and kick us all out.
It's funny.
I think he'd do that.
I think he'd do that, too.
I think he would dig that ditch, just like you were talking about.
I've never understood coaches that are like that. I really don't. I mean, because a big part of being a head coach in a professional sport, even a major college sport, is that role of dealing with the media and handling that. And you know, some coaches are just so good at it, and some coaches just, it's like pulling teeth.
Yeah. We used to have the segment with the fine man who preceded me, the Reedy Railroad, which was whenever Marvin would choose to just truck him and run over whatever his line of questioning was.
Never saw the crossing sign, did he?
No. Well, Reedy knew he was walking where he was walking into, and he said he would happily stand there for the good of everyone.
Reedy versus Train. Winner,
yeah,
Train.
Yeah. Train often won, and I was the one that ended up having to step in front of the tracks today.
Oh, you did, yeah, very early in the press conference.
Yeah, I did, and you know, because at some point someone's got to poke the bear and find out what the mood is. You know, and I didn't even think I was poking the bear. I thought I was asking a nice, easy little question about Paul Gunther. You know,
his defense is doing great.
What a great hire. What a great hire this guy made. It's time to say some no. As I've said this whole time, it was probably par for the course, I guess.
Yeah.
It was right then we kind of learned what kind of day this was going to be.
Yeah.
But that was today as Monday as we're recording this. But as we mentioned, Bengals 24, Falcons 10, 2-0 on the season. All is right with the world. Nobody, no fans are standing on the bridge thinking about jumping. Everybody is talking about how great the Bengals are. I've seen the power rankings start coming out, and everybody
love with the national media loves them, don't they?
Now it's they're the best team in the AFC. They're the Super Bowl pick. They're Peter King has them number 3 in his fine 15, and everybody loves the Bengals. Listen, this league changes too quick. From week to week,
it changes. It changes from half. It changes from quarter to quarter. If anybody needs proof of that, either go back and look on Rewind, or hopefully maybe you watch a little bit of the Sunday night game. No game epitomizes the NFL better than the Frisco Bears game.
Yeah.
Frisco owns them for almost 3 quarters and somehow blows a 17-point second half lead at home. That's the league in a nutshell.
I went to sleep at 10 o'clock with 10 minutes left and said this thing's over. I'm just gonna go ahead and go to sleep. And woke up next day and I'm Bears come. You've got to be kidding me.
And it wasn't like some dramatic comeback either. No. They just kept nickel and diming their way back in the football game. By the way, thanks to Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah.
Who threw a couple of picks and dropped the ball on the turf once.
It's an interesting way that you can lose a football game, it appears. Let's get into that actually. Let's start there. I want to for a little teaser what we're going to get to. We're going to get to Paul Gunther and his defense, who have been fairly incredible. We're going to get to Giovanni Bernard and Jeremy Hill. We saw the unveiling of them in this game. Are they just, 42 carries and even more? What was it
49 touches, 42 carries, 7 receptions between the two of them.
49 touches.
And it's an interesting stat because I did it today. The Bengals ran 69 offensive snaps. They had a handful of incompletions. Andy was, 15 to 23. Yeah, so 8 incompletions. So out of 61 completed plays, those two guys touched it on 49 of them.
Yep. And I have both of those on our little fantasy game.
Oh, yeah. Remind me of that.
Yeah, that was fairly helpful.
Thank goodness for my defense this week. We'll get to that in a little bit.
We will. We'll get to the fan if you want to talk.
Sadly, I had one A.J. Green.
Yeah. We will talk fantasy implications for a number of players of the Bengals, for those of you looking out for that. We'll get to that at the end of the podcast. And we have a lot of injuries that we need to get to and discuss where they sit at and where the concern should be. So that's all what we're going to get to. And while we're plugging things, also Tuesday night, 7 o'clock, Moorline Lagerhouse, Beyond the Stripes. Jason DeMonch, our guest this Tuesday, if you're listening and that has already passed, a special announcement for you is that for the bye week, the 23rd, Marvin Lewis is going to actually be our guest.
He likes
Beyond
us.
The Stripes. Yeah. So hopefully he doesn't listen to the first 5 minutes of this podcast.
He knows what he's like, though.
He does.
He's okay with it. And he is okay with
it. He's very much okay with it. And it's just part of the deal as being a head coach. Is sometimes you got to swat little gnats like us.
And honestly, as long as you're professional, and that's all I ask, I don't need you to be happy and nice.
And if you remember last year when Marvin came on the show, he was fantastic. It was one of the best half hours we had all year, I thought, and I think we all thought it would be the opposite. He was absolutely great with us, engaging, interesting, insightful, all the things that he isn't a lot of times in these press conferences that are sort of the daily grind. And I think it helps to get into a more comfortable area and off out of that stage. You know what I mean?
I'll be honest. Cameras seem to bother him for whatever reason, even though I know that's a camera-type show, but they do for whatever
reason. But we're the internet, so.
Yeah, right. Maybe that helps. Because there are times, on Fridays, he's a lot more engaging when he talks to the handful
Absolutely.
Of beat writers. It's just, again, I just think for certain coaches, you come off of yesterday. I know it was a win, but at the same time, he's dealing with all these injuries. Maybe he had a bad morning. Maybe something on film just set him off. Who knows? It happens to a lot of guys. I mean, look, I'm not the happiest guy in the world every morning I get up either, so I'm going to give him a pass. As long as you answer my questions, at least attempt to, that's all I'm going to ask you.
You are butterflies and rainbow skinny. Don't even say such things. So, all right, let's talk about it. Let's start with the offense here. Andy Dalton, you mentioned 15 of 23, and he ends up going for 252 yards, has a touchdown. Of course, the great throw to Mohamed Sanu with Jonathan Babineau right in his face, and that against Cover Zero that ended up really blowing the top off the game. A game that the Bengals really dominated, but struggled to put points on the board thanks to 3 missed field goals and just not inability to punch it in the end zone down there. Atlanta was hanging around. You're wondering if it's going to be a repeat of Baltimore, and then boom, after that play, 17-3. Then a pick right after that, another score, and it was over. And at that point, that was it.
Yep.
It was just a matter of putting it away, and it really all started with Dalton. But here, the number I can rattle off a bunch of numbers if I want to. Andy Dalton, only one really matters: zero picks again for Andy Dalton. That's two games in a row and he's gone with zero picks. We talked numbers. I ran a few numbers today.
Mm-hmm.
Here's some numbers for you on Andy Dalton, and it'll explain something which I'll get to after this. When Andy Dalton, it's the last 2 years, so 12-13 in the first two games of this year. When he throws zero picks, the Bengals are 11-1. When he throws one pick, they're 8-5. When he throws two, they're 3-2. Three, they're 0-3. Four, they're actually 1-0. That crazy game against Baltimore last year.
Yeah,
just
last
sort of
game.
The anomaly. But, I mean, 11-1 when he doesn't throw an interception. Think about that.
It's funny. It is a simple league because if you don't turn it over and you get turnovers, chances are really good you win. It sounds like such a simple formula. It's not that simple to do. I mean, if you just set out and said, hey, let's not turn the ball over, that sounds great. You've got to figure out a way to not do that. You got to have running backs that are good at hanging on to the football. They seem like they've got a couple of them. And your quarterback has got to make good decisions, has got to take care of the football, can't always take chances. And so far under Hugh Jackson in this offense, he's been exactly what they asked for.
That's the biggest difference that you can notice. If you're into comparing and you're looking at the difference between Jay Gruden and Hugh Jackson, it's readily apparent that he is playing to Andy Dalton's strengths and, more importantly, playing away from his weaknesses. He is not making him throw a bunch of risky throws.
Into tight windows.
Down the field, right. None of that. Work everything short. Let him get you into the right decision. Spread people out. Use the run to help offset all of that. And he throw the ball down the field if necessary.
When he sees the coverage dictated. The
absolutely.
AJ Green coverage dictated.
But this is not,
yesterday, the coverage dictated it.
This is not, you know, 15, 20-yard ins between zone coverages and stuff like that. As you mentioned, when 49 of your 61 completed plays are going to the running backs, that's the kind of way that you can operate and win games because it allows you to win the turnover stat and keep Andy Dalton from hurting you in a sense.
And the other part with that, Paul, is you're getting out of his hands quicker. You're not.
Yes.
You're not. I mean, he's got.
And he's good at that.
He's not been sacked yet this season.
No sacks. No turnovers.
They are getting out of his hands a little bit quicker. Some of that, obviously, you got to credit the offensive line for that as well.
Absolutely.
I think that's a huge stat. In fact, there's another great stat as well. They're just the second team since 1960 to go the first two games of a season with no turnovers and no sacks in back-to-back games. And that tells the story of why they've primarily won these two games.
Yeah, the other team was the 2006 San Diego Chargers.
And they were pretty good.
Went on to go 14-2. I don't know if that's the type of season that you should be expecting of the Bengals, but at the very least, it's pretty good company to be in.
No question. No question.
That team probably didn't win a playoff game either.
I don't think they did. As your Indy went to the
kind of funny that
that was
they
the year
mentioned.
Indy went to the Super Bowl. Actually, the year Indy won the Super
that
Bowl.
That was Marty time right
yes,
there.
It was.
Lots of good seasons
yes,
and lots of
lots
empty
of,
playoffs.
Yes. No Super Bowls.
Sound familiar at
yeah,
all to
yeah,
anyone? Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean,
but the formula is a good formula still.
The formula is still a good formula, and I want to quickly, this is from post game. I'm going to bring in Andy Dalton when I was asking him a little bit about that formula and if he notices the differences in his own game now, if he as far as how he's taking care of the ball and utilizing some of these this safer offense. So here's a little bit of Andy Dalton after Sunday's win against the Falcons.
The touchdown pass to Sanu. Did you have to get rid of that a little earlier than you wanted to with Davino right in your face?
Well, I mean, I knew that they were bringing all out pressure there. And so, you know, one guy is going to be unblocked. And so, you know, we had a good check on, and, you know, Mo ran a really good route. And, you know, when you're playing cover zero and you make one guy miss, I mean, there's nobody else in the back end. And so, you know, when he fell off on the route, I mean, Mo had a pretty easy jog in the end zone.
Of all the stats that you've had through two games so far, I imagine zero interceptions is probably right on top of what you're probably most proud of.
Yeah, and turnovers are big, and turnovers decide the game. And so we got to keep doing a good job protecting the ball.
Thank you. you find yourself approaching the game a little differently this year in regards to not throwing picks, or is it the same, just been execution?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I think, the way that I'm seeing the field and the way that, I've kind of been directing this offense, I think I've got a better understanding of, when to take a chance and try to fit things, and then others want to check it down. And so, it's been good to us so far. We got to keep that up.
So that's Dalton. And, I think he admits there is a little bit to that. I mean, he does recognize playing it a little bit safer, and that's part of his maturation, maybe. I don't know. The more you know about him, the more coaches figure out how to play to his strengths and what his weaknesses are. Now, the question will be, teams are eventually going to force him to throw the ball down the field a little bit more.
How do you do that, though, Paul? How do you make somebody throw the ball down the field? If a team's running it will on you, or at least successfully on you.
They have to stop the run and be all over those backs coming out of the back.
And so then do you really want to put eight in the box and have A.J. Green manned up when he's healthy, if he's healthy? I mean, do you really
maybe
want
that's
Marvin
the chance
Jones
you
be-
take and say that Dalton won't make it happen?
And that's a possibility, too. The one thing I'll trust Andy on, if there's man coverage and he's got a chance to throw it down the field, I have no hesitation. I think you hit the nail on the head. The passes he's not being asked to throw are those deep ends, those deep crosses that some quarterbacks are great at. I mean, that's what their strength is to throw that and make big plays doing that. The risk-reward for this team doesn't lie in that regard, and that's not his strength.
Yeah, and actually, his deep ball efficiency last year, which is something he gets knocked for, was it's ill-advised knocks. He really shouldn't be knocked for that. He actually threw the ball very effectively down the field, and he threw it down the field almost as much as anybody in football last year, but he also was completing a high number of them up there with Peyton Manning in that stat.
Well, I'll give you a couple of examples, too, from Sunday that he didn't make good throws on, but they were the risk-reward type passes. They were down in the red zone-ish area. He missed through one to Mohamed Sanu down the sideline where it looked like Sanu kind of got bumped, and Marvin actually alluded to that today. And he threw another one to Dane Sansenbacher on an out pattern down in the end zone, actually a couple of them, where he just missed. And yes, some of that is he needs to hit those throws. But it was better than making a poor throw behind a guy that was going to lead to an interception. He tried to throw it out in front, tried to throw it where he was the only guy that could catch it. Unfortunately, the timing of it wasn't quite right. I'd rather he complete those if I'm a Bengals fan or if I'm the Bengals coaching staff, but it beats the alternative of throwing it in the wrong place in that circumstance.
Here's the other thing, and I think I mentioned this last week. I don't know, this seems like ages ago, but really there hasn't been any near picks either.
No.
I mean, there haven't been anywhere a guy dropped one or a guy was right there and you said, oh, there's bad Andy. There hasn't been any of that. And now a lot of that has to do with the fact that he hasn't been under much pressure, and which is it's been a thing for him in the past where when pressure comes, there's been panic in those bad throws. But, I mean, not only have you not seen the near picks, but the two biggest plays now in this season that turned both games were when teams attempted to blitz him.
That's right.
And when everybody said the one knock on Andy Dalton is you blitz him and he can't handle it, he will give you the ball. It's been proven over and over again. Maybe he's starting to. I mean, I don't think it's too early to say that he is debunking that and turning it into a myth. But I think it's clear that he's shown through two games the ability to make teams pay more so than he has in the past if they're going to try to pull that strategy.
How about the two times he improvised under pressure yesterday, too? One was kind of a shovel pass to Giovanni Bernard that Bernard took and ran like a crazy man for 20-something yards. Mm-hmm. The other one was literally Bernard turning around and the two of them yelling at each other and him dumping it off to Gio, and Gio running 46 yards. And both of those circumstances, he could have taken maybe a sack or could have made a silly decision down the field and kind of made a safe play. If Gio doesn't catch the shovel pass, it's incomplete. You start again. If he doesn't catch a little dump off, it's incomplete. You start again. Instead, they turn into almost 100 yards on the two plays combined.
Yeah. Are you concerned about that many touches for Gio?
Yes. In the short-term window, you say no. It works out well. You want to get your guy to have his hands on the ball that much, but long term, I'm just not sure he's that kind of guy. And it's funny, we were talking about the 2006 Chargers a little bit ago. That was the LaDainian Tomlinson just spectacular year where he had the 1,800 yards rushing and about 60 receptions and scored 31 touchdowns. They're kind of similar body types if you think about it. Both kind of smallish, but still thick through the hip area and all that. I just can't see Gio getting what now is an average of 26 touches a game, Paul. I just cannot see that. I think he's better served getting 18 to 20 touches a game. And maybe long term, you'll see that.
Yeah, because I think right now they feel like they're still easing Jeremy Hill in. And maybe midway through the season, it becomes, well, giving Hill the ball more now that they trust him makes more sense to take a little bit of the punishment off of Gio. But for now, they got to go with the guy they can trust, and they still trust Gio a lot more than Jeremy Hill, and for good reason.
And in yesterday's game, I mean, you lost your best offensive guy, too. That's the other part, too. I mean, you're down, literally, you and I crunched the numbers on this yesterday, between him, Marvin Jones, and Tyler Eifert, you're down 250 catches, 2,500 yards, and 23 touchdowns from last year.
Yeah.
So really, in this offense right now, yesterday, if I'm Hugh Jackson, I am getting Giovanni Bernard as many touches as I possibly can, even if it borders on the absurd amount for him. But game in and game out, you're not getting him 32 touches. You're probably not going to get him more than 20 touches.
No. You look at where he's at right now. I mean, he's on a pace for well over 300 touches and over 2,200 yards from scrimmage.
Spectacular.
And this is kind of what we talked about in the offseason, that we said at the end of the year, if this offense is what they want it to be, you will say that Giovanni Bernard is what made it go.
And so far it has been.
It has been. I mean, it really has. I mean, they've featured him. He's made the plays that they've needed to get it done. But I will say, when you look at consistency, Jeremy Hill has...
I'm gonna stand by
especially this. Running the ball. I mean, it's just over and over again. I mean, the numbers play themselves out. Gio is far better in space, and I think you want it because his threat catching the ball to the backfield is invaluable and a huge part of this team.
Although Jeremy Hill said he can do that too.
Yeah, but consistency in actually running the football, especially between the tackles, Jeremy Hill has a real knack for that. 15 for 74 for 4.9. Yesterday as compared to 27 for 90 for 3.3 for Gio. I'm not saying that Giovanni Bernard isn't a fine runner. I think those numbers are product of a number of things, but it's no joke that all of a sudden he's averaging 4.9. I mean, he's great at those consistent numbers.
I'll stand by. I think Jeremy Hill leads this team in rushing when the season's over. It won't be by a lot, but he'll lead this team in rushing. Now, Gio's going to lead it in yards from scrimmage, I think, by far. But
yeah.
Jeremy Hill will lead this team in rushing. It's just impossible for a coach to not look at a 6'1", 238-pound guy who has a good burst and not say, I got to get him the ball between the tackles and let's just go at it. It's going to evolve into that.
And even taking it out to the edges. I mean, I was really impressed with Hill. The one toss play out there that looked completely blocked up, not only did he just sneak through a crease, but when he got through it, he bursted through it and took an extra 5-6 yards. That's just a rare play to be able to get to the edge and then see it blocked up and still be able to push it through.
He's a natural runner. I mean, he just has – he's got all that stuff you want. Vision, burst, strength.
And he can stay turnt. Yeah, which he has on the back of his shoes.
Turned down for what?
Turned down for what? Yeah, I mean, it was Giovanni Bernard and Jeremy Hill now placing out to their followers on Twitter trying to ask for a nickname for their duo.
I'm not a big nickname guy, but I kind of think this duo does deserve one.
Yeah, and I feel like they're different enough and unique enough that we probably could find some. Turnt has to be in there.
Well,
right?
I saw you had one that you suggested.
Twist and Turnt.
I don't mind that because that's kind of Gio's kind of a twisting type of running back. I kind of like that one.
That's not it, but it's in the area, I think. It's got to be, and maybe not the and. There's always the and with these guys,
right?
Bam and slam, or thunder and lightning, or something like that.
Flash and dash.
Yeah, I kind of want to kill the and. I want something that's just, you know, I don't know, whatever that would be, just a single word for two people. So I put it out there to our loyal podcast listeners. You are the diehards. If you want to see a nickname catch on for these two, please send it to me. Either hit us up on
Twitter.
You're
the king of putting the hashtags out to see where it goes.
You got to see where it goes. Just let it fly. See what happens. Although Jeremy did tell me today that he got about a couple hundred people sending in their ideas, and that there were a few that were pretty funny. But so we may have to run through that.
Not all of them clean, I'm going to guess.
I'm going to assume we're going to have to run through some of those. I'm going to attempt for a story to get down, get into that list and see what all they came up with and talk about, see if we can figure out maybe some that have some potential and see if we can't maybe put together a poll or something. I don't know.
We'll come up with something.
We'll come up with something.
Yours is not to patronize you. Yours is a pretty good one.
Twist and turn? I don't know. It's got the and. It's got the and. I'm anti-and.
Well, you can do twist and turn.
Twist and turn. Oh, un? Yeah. No, I don't want to have to write the and apostrophe. What, okay. That's just my own personal. That's just makes my job harder.
Twist dash and dash turn.
No, there's double dashes in there.
Yeah, you don't want any part of that either.
I don't want any part of that. I don't like using the dash button.
Turned and burnt. Yeah, see, there's
turned and burnt.
Yeah, see, there's the n again.
Yeah. There it is. Turned and burnt isn't terrible. Although burnt, I don't know.
Yeah, we'll come up with it. We'll come. And maybe one of our listeners will have a great
idea. Please, listeners, help us. We clearly need help.
Yes, we do.
In a number of ways. So if you know any therapists.
This is just a small way.
This is just. If you know anybody that can help us in the big picture, let us know. All right, let's move on to this defense that we're not supposed to talk glowingly about because it's no big deal because a guy showing up his first time ever making play calls in his first two games absolutely
just made it look easy.
Making it look easy, but that's not a storyline. It's no secret. It was supposed to happen.
Yet you wrote about it. You're writing about it for Tuesday's paper.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
Absolutely. No, I'm pointing at that's sort of the company line that we're being fed around here. I think it's more than fairly impressive, to tell you the truth. I mean, what Paul Gunther has been able to do, particularly on Sunday against that passing attack, and really on a day when his scheme carried the day. It wasn't like now Carlos Dunlap absolutely dominated his matchup.
Yes, yeah, which we expected.
Was it Lamar? Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I mean, he really should. When you're Lamar Holmes. Yeah, when you're talking about Lamar Holmes.
You're talking about a guard playing tackle.
You're talking about a guard playing tackle who wasn't really good last year either, and Carlos Dunlap just owned him.
I mean, let's be fair. The Falcons are down. What would be their two starting tackles? Jake Matthews, a rookie, would be the right tackle.
Yeah.
They had their left tackle get hurt prior to that, move Matthews to left tackle, but then he's hurt, so they're literally playing two guards at tackle.
That was the huge advantage that they had. That was the huge advantage that the Bengals had, and they took advantage of it. Carlos did. But outside of him, the defensive line really didn't do a whole lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, Gilberry, Geno Atkins, Gathers.
I mean, really, they benefited, quite frankly, from how well the guys covered it down the field.
Absolutely.
And from the different blitz schemes that he came up with from time to time.
That's my whole point, is when you have Carlos being pretty much the only guy from the front four really getting in there, what Paul Gunther was dialing up, whether through blitzes or schemes or deciding to cover, just keeping Matt Ryan off rhythm and off balance was really what changed the game. And for a guy in his second game as a coordinator to pull that off against that type of an offense, I just think is really impressive.
Well, and you put that on the heels of what they did against Baltimore. I mean, Baltimore scores one of their touchdowns on a busted coverage, for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. And really, part of it, too, was, you know, Baltimore started to make some headway in that second half because your defense got tired because the offense started to bog down just a little bit thanks to injury and different issues. I mean, I almost think that the first game was almost as spectacular as yesterday. Yesterday's is spectacular because of what that Falcons offense did last week against New Orleans and the fact that they do have big scoring potential. I mean, I think that's an offense when you look at the end of the season, it will be over 30 points five or six different times this year. They can put a lot of points up on the board. And really, you gave them nothing. I mean, the one touchdown drive they had was a fairly garbage time-ish effort where you're just making sure no big plays, keep them in front of us, tackle, keep them in bounds.
Make sure it takes a while. Yeah, absolutely.
And it did. I mean, so it was.
So far in the first halves of their two games, they have given up one field goal.
Yep.
All that they've given up. The 10 points by the Falcons is ties for the lowest total they've had under Matt Ryan since the opener of 2010 against Pittsburgh.
Staggering.
And
aside from the problems up front offensively, and that's a big part of it, he's got a lot of weapons around him, and he's a very good quarterback.
Yeah, and that's my whole point is if your only worry for – your only knock on Falcons offense is, well, you know, they have – the problems in the tackles and up and on the line pretty much protected outside of Carlos Dunlap ruining his day. that falls back to the secondary and Paul Gunther and them putting together the game plan. I mean, it wasn't like this was some they took advantage of their weakness on the line situation. It was, I think he outcoached him.
I agree with you. And I'll tell you what, let's hear from him, shall we?
Yeah, let's hear from Paul Gunther. Here's Paul Gunther with a little bit about the team's effort against Atlanta.
Carlos, yesterday was one of those games where you needed him.
Yeah.
He had the matchup. Geno's still working his way back, you know, and he's really delivered. He really delivered.
Yeah, he did. He probably played one of his best games as a pro yesterday. I mean, he played really good. He's coming off the edge, you know, and I challenged really both the ends, all the ends. I said, we got to win right here because I wasn't sure going in, you know, if I was going to have to cover with seven all day, you know, how it was – you know, what it was going to be, a four-man rush or whatever it is. But, you know, as the game kind of went on, you know, they were putting – last week they had a bunch of four receiver sets. So, you know, trying to get the ball out of their hand a little bit faster because I knew they only protected with six guys because they didn't have a tight end in the game. So, he did a really good job, really good game.
They tightened it up on you a little bit though, right? I mean, they didn't run as many – looked like they had a tight end.
Well, they tried. They tried to get in the four receivers, but he was getting hit, so right. they went back.
Right.
So,
yeah. Sorry, Paul.
No. That's that. I mean, but he's one of those guys that he seems every year he's that much closer to kind of getting over the hump and really being that guy. You think he's almost there now?
I told him when Vontaze took me to Hawaii, I called him. I said, there's no reason why you can't be a Pro Bowl defensive end. You have the talent to do it. Mm-hmm. And it's my job as a coach, our job as coaches, to get him to that level. Now, he's got to follow through with it, but he's got to realize that he could be a top tier defensive end in this league.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just got to get it out of him. And you know, he's getting to that point where he's starting to understand if he works his tail off through the week in practice, then it'll pay off on Sunday.
What has it been that's kind of slowed him from realizing
that? I told him now he's one of the leaders. You know, Michael left. Michael was here before him. Now he's kind of one of the leaders in there, that my best player's got to practice the hardest.
Yeah.
And if he's going to be the best player, so, you know, like that's what I told Vontaze, my best player's got to practice, no problem. Leon, all those guys. So the younger guys see it, you know, you know, he's done better at that. You know, he used to be not real good practice player, take plays off, but he's doing everything the right way now this year.
Has it helped to have, when you have a Vontaze, when you have a Nelson, when you have...
Yeah, when you have guys like that that are hard workers in practice, it feeds off, you know. Yeah. It's self-contained.
You kind of mentioned Mike leaving. I mean, has that in a ways kind of helped his mindset? I mean, even off the field, he's talked about picking up where Mike left off with helping being bigger in the community and stuff like that. Has that kind of helped, you think, him have that mindset because Mike's gone?
Yeah. I think the light's come on for him as far as a maturity standpoint.
Yeah.
You know? And the thing he's got to realize is he's got all the talent, and he just got to, I think he's getting more mature.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's no reason why he can't be a Pro Bowler. No reason.
It seems like, probably, maybe I'm wrong, but it seems like you kind of go, if you can blitz, you will. Mm-hmm. If you can't, then you'll go four-man rush. And if you can't get there with a blitz or if something doesn't happen. But it seems like a lot of guys will go, we'll go, you know, we'll see if we can get pressure with four. If we can't, then we'll blitz. You seem to almost be the other way.
I just try to be indiscriminate about my play calling, so a guy can't really get a feel for what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's important. If you get in too much of a rhythm, like, hey, we're going to four-man rush on, let's just say, four-man rush, so you get to third down, and you're going to see exotic blitzes, you know. I try to mix it up the best I can. You know, if I feel like, hey, we can get there at four, I'll get there at four. But, you know.
I mean, I think you got there with, I mean, you could, because I don't think you had to blitz, really, you didn't have to blitz, did you?
I think we did. If you want to rush four, we could have probably gotten home with four, but now you're talking about Pat. I wanted the ball out of his hand.
Yeah.
And there was many throws in that game, particularly early. The ball came out of his hand, and the receivers were out there. He's a rhythm passer.
Yeah.
So if you rush with four, he can get a feel, take his 5-7-step drop, hitch, throw, ball's out, okay? But I wanted to mix up the looks on the guy, whether I was rushing four, five, six, or seven, so he never really had a feel for it. And I think early in the game, you know, we hit him a few times, got him off his spot. You get guys like that are good passers that are rhythm type throwers off, you know, off their game a little bit.
So there's Paul Gunther. You can't say enough about where this defense is at right now, considering, you know, what losing Mike Zimmer.
Yeah, here's the funny part to that too. Zim's tremendous. I mean, I didn't get a chance to cover him. You guys did, and you guys still speak in hallowed terms of about Zim, and I understand that, and rightfully so. I just know of what I've seen from Gunther and what I saw from afar of Mike Zimmer. You know, when you replace somebody that successful, and it's still the same core of players. Your inclination is, I'm not going to mess it. I'm going to do exactly what that guy did. I'm not going to mess this up. I can't mess this up if I just do what he did. Paul's decided, I'm going to do this a little bit differently. I'm going to run my own system the way I want to run it. He's got those guys to completely buy in. I mean, how many guys did we talk to on defense in that locker room yesterday, Paul, or on Sunday, that they wanted to talk about what he did as a coordinator as much as anything else?
Yeah.
That's staggering for how much they love playing for Mike Zimmer. And to quickly buy into this guy that way, and it wasn't lip service. I mean, they, to a man, every one of them talked glowingly about what he did and the way he called that game and the way he schemed that game.
Yeah, Adam Jones said he needs to get the game ball, and you know, amongst other players in that defense who are starting to talk about him in similar vein as you heard from Mike Zimmer, which is what we talked about a lot in our early podcast preview of the season, was will this defense stay tight and believing in Paul Gunther when times get rough. Now, times
have
not
gotten rough
yet.
Yeah.
So you can't really say that for sure. But by all inclinations of what we're seeing, I think this game goes a long way to making guys believe in the plan when the ship does start to sway a little bit. In remember what Paulie G did against Atlanta or whatever, or believing in that. And I think that can go a long way. I think that can be a big deal. But
and lastly, just to put a bow on this, he's also doing this with still Geno, just doesn't look, he's not even close to there yet.
No.
And you've had Vontaze get knocked out of both. You've gotten literally, what, 4.5 quarters out of Vontaze Burfict so far this year in 2 games.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing this without that. Wait till that is giving you full games and full performance level.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up because it's a lovely segue. You're very good at this. Because we need to talk injuries, and so we can talk about this guy, Vontaze Burfict, who is amongst the major ones. Burfict, Green, and Zeitler really are the three that we need to get to. Let's start with Burfict. Mm-hmm. I don't like this one bit. I don't. When you have now 2 weeks in a row with concussion, stinger concussion, I don't know exactly how it's going to be termed on Wednesday.
It was probably termed stinger Sunday. But
yeah, but I think it's something in that area.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's a very
real.
And he
looked punch drunk again.
Yeah, it was the same thing. I mean, when you get 2 weeks in a row, I remember from back right well before the season started, I did a story on youth concussions, mm-hmm, and things of that nature. But in it, I talked to Mike Wright, who played at UC, and he played for a number of years for New England.
It was a nose tackle, defensive tackle.
And he retired early. I believe he was 28 when he retired because he'd had multiple concussions in a row and started to notice how much harder it was to come back from them. And it scared him, you know? And when you go now 2 weeks in a row, I'm sorry, that's concerning.
No question.
When you're in that area, I mean, it's got to be time where you start protecting players from themselves.
Yeah, the concussion protocol is a very rigid one now. I mean, it literally, the last decision is not the team's decision. It's an independent doctor.
Neurologist,
making that decision. Vontaze showed enough improvement, obviously, over the week. We saw him at practice on Friday, to where he was back to some level of normalcy. Some people, again, concussions are different. Some are extremely severe. Some are, their brain just got a little bit rattled. It's still, concussions are bad. I mean, every doctor will tell you there's no slight concussion, but there's obviously different grades of them. So he was good enough. He passed enough protocol to get back to practice Friday. Still had to pass his protocol Sunday, which he did. But I'm in agreement with you. This is back-to-back weeks of this now. He was good enough to come back Sunday. You had it happen literally immediately the same day that you've passed your final concussion protocol. Yeah, it might be a stinger, but it's certainly in that area to where I would be stunned, and I'm probably going to come back to this, is going to bite me in the butt when I say I'll be stunned if he plays Sunday.
Yeah, that seems, especially when you have, and I think anybody looking at the situation, would say,
you know what? And you asked, not to cut you off, I'm sorry, but you asked a really good question of Marvin today, and it was not an easy question to answer, but phrase it again, because I thought it was the right question to ask of him about Perfect, about protecting.
Does it concern you at all? But do you as a coach and a staff have to worry about protecting players from themselves? I mean, that's the thing, is because Vontaze Burfict will go play. He
would go play if he doesn't know what day of the week it is. I mean, he really would.
I'm taken back to the San Diego game last year when no one gave him a chance to play. He was basically, I don't remember what exactly the injury was, but it was basically a broken something. And he went out there and played and had an unbelievable game in that win at San Diego. Because that's him.
Yep.
That's who he is. He's superhuman. He's all these things that have been bestowed upon him. Well, you got to take that guy, and you got to tell him it doesn't matter if you want to play. I'm helping you as someone who knows better.
It's hard to do that.
No, he's got to go through the protocol. So the bottom line is that's
the great part about the protocol. Now the protocol takes it out of it. That way, as a coach, it's not on you that you threw this guy back.
But
in.
What do we really know about these tests, though, Skinny?
Honestly, what do we know?
I don't know that they can't get around it. As long as he doesn't say he has a headache and can kind of get back to what are these things? They're nebulous, is what they are, as
you're
Marvin
right.
Lewis has said.
No, that's a legit.
So
point.
I don't know. I don't know that these tests are good. I mean, who can ever tell? So, I feel like the Bengals doctors, not that they wouldn't be honest about this type of stuff, but they need to be really taking a close look. This is 2 weeks in a row now with this.
And with a bye week coming.
With a bye week coming, maybe this is the time to just sit them down and get those basically 3 weeks away and then come back in New England and feel better about it.
Yes, yeah.
Speaking of that strategy, I think that might be a pretty good strategy for AJ Green as well. Now we heard from Marvin Lewis today, and a report's sort of out that a strained ligament.
Well, but the report's varied. One of them said strained toe, strained foot.
Yeah.
He obviously has it. It was diagnosed as a foot injury on Wednesday, or at least reported as a foot injury.
He had to. He must. He. It seemed, we don't know this for sure, but you can go 99% because he showed up mysteriously on the injury report on Wednesday. So have to assume this happened in practice on Wednesday. Probably thought he was good. Went out there for 6 plays on Sunday, and he probably learned pretty immediately it was not, or maybe re-aggravated it or whatever, and so he was out for the rest of the game. Couldn't make it happen. When you're talking strains and ligaments, whatever it is, rest is the only thing that will get you there. And you've got a game here against Tennessee, and then a bye week again. Seems like another opportunity. You don't want AJ Green worrying about strains in his foot all year long.
And
go win a game against the Tennessee Titans without him.
Right. And while Marvin said today he didn't think it was long term. That's a fairly relative term as well. Does that mean it's not 5 years long term, 2 years long term? I mean, honestly, long term could be three weeks. It depends on what your definition of
long term could be the whole season.
Yeah, that's at least a fairly optimistic viewpoint that it's not long term. But long term to me means that it doesn't sound like he would play this week, but that, hey, long term, he will be back to our football team this year.
Yeah, I would say that it's, to me, it would seem, you know, it's harder to talk about this now. On Monday, you'll know more as the injury reports come out and we get more information to gather.
Just to give people some protocol on this, the NFL does not require teams to release injury reports on Monday. Some reports on different players come out. You know, if a player breaks his leg on Sunday, you're probably going to know about that. Today, Ryan Matthews of the San Diego Chargers, he ended up having a sprained MCL. I don't know if that was released by the team or by him or by somebody associated, but you'll occasionally get stuff like that will come out. But some teams are very close to the vest with it. You're not going to probably get many injury reports out of New England.
No.
Denver, back in the Mike Shanahan days, was not going to give you too many injury reports on Monday. And Marvin's cut
the
from that
same
cloth.
Way.
Just, he's going to wait until he absolutely has to tell you. And I respect that.
Yeah,
I don't like it as a reporter, but I respect that.
Personally, although, I mean, if you're reading the tea leaves, it would seem to just scream, no A.J. Green this week, bye week, back against New England.
Yeah.
And then at that point,
you have him
hope,
and Marvin Jones.
They hope to have Marvin Jones back as well, who saw Marvin Jones a number of times walking around the facility. I've seen him sprinting on the treadmills. He's walking around fine. He was sprinting up and down the field before the game on Sunday. He looks to be absolutely in line to be back by week 5.
What if he gets some reps in practice this week? Not to play,
possibly,
but maybe just to get
surprised.
Some reps, because you're coming in a bye week, just get him kind of acclimated a little bit.
I would not be shocked at all if he got a little bit of rep, maybe Friday.
Right.
Come in on
right.
a soft
right.
Friday practice,
right.
run around a little bit, and then have the game played, and then you have 2 weeks off, and then he's ready to go full go, because he still needs to get his legs underneath him.
No question.
A little bit. So the less optimistic of these three is Kevin Zeitler, who had a calf injury in the game on Sunday, and man, he does not. He didn't look good. He on crutches, big boot on the left foot.
Right foot.
Right foot. Yep. Sorry, thank you. Big boot on the right foot in the locker room. And he was unable to put any pressure on the boot or anything. I mean, he had somebody need to help him carry his bags out after the game on Sunday. I mean, we didn't hear anything today about IR or anything like that. So maybe there's still hope, but it's going to be a while for Kevin Zeitler.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I don't even want to speculate on weeks, or because we still don't know officially what the injury is, other than it was calf, but it obviously didn't look good. A couple people stopped him in the locker room today to ask if he would talk, and he said, I'd rather get released by the team. That's what usually the answer is from players, but that they're not going to. If it's simply, hey, I sprained my ankle, I think I'm going to be fine, you may just say, hey, I'm going to be okay. But in this case, when you hear that, it's just in the, what you saw. It's not good, unfortunately.
And it's unfortunate because Kevin Zeitler had been playing really well through two games, and I know a lot of people Lapp in our season preview
loved him. Thought
that he was going to be the breakout player on this team this year, and really is putting it together. So that's an unfortunate injury. The good portion of this is they do have Mike Pollock, who stepped in and many people thought maybe should have been a starter somewhere in the interior this year because he played so well last year.
Yeah, whether it was him at the center spot or even him at the other guard spot.
Or even playing guard. Yeah. So now he steps in, and he stepped in for Kevin Zeitler last year when he was hurt. So you're okay with that. The question with him, though,
durability
is what about that knee? I mean, he's struggled to come back from his knee injury where he's had to sit out practices consistently every week, and that's the way it's going to be all year.
Yeah, he sat out one day each of the last 2 weeks, I think Thursday both days, if I'm not mistaken. I'm doing that off the top of my head, but he's at least sat out one day of practice just to get a rest day, but that rest is because
he has a knee issue that's going to nag him all season that he's going to be playing through.
And keep in mind, I don't think took a snap in the Baltimore game, if I'm not mistaken. He may have taken a snap or two, but it certainly wasn't very much. So he did play a bunch of snaps on Sunday because Zeitler went out at just before halftime. I guess the good part to some degree here is for Pollock is you get him ready to play this game, then you have at least another week he can kind of rest that knee because of the bye week too, and then hopefully that continues to build up some level of hopefully strength in him. But yeah, and you know, from there, then you do have some real problems if somebody gets hurt.
Then you get down into T.J. Johnson and Tanner Hawkinson. And you're not happy about your options at that point.
Right.
So, I mean,
or moving Witt back inside and putting Marshall Newhouse back outside,
which is a very real option.
You got to juggle it.
Yeah, I mean, they've got enough guys that can move around in there that would be an option. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked to see Witt back end up in guard at any point. I mean, he'll do whatever they ask him to do to win. And let's just be honest, if you're putting your best five out there, I'll put Marshall Newhouse out there at left tackle before I'll put T.J. Johnson at right guard.
No question. I mean, right now it's an easy fix because Pollock
is right there.
Semi-seamless, even though, you know, Zeitler's probably a better player, but semi-seamless. But then after that, it's juggle time.
Then it's a drop-off. So anybody that you don't want to see any more players go down on that line. All right. Well, there are other Alex Smith, tight end, Brandon Thompson.
I saw him today. He had a sleeve on, and I don't know if it was just a sleeve because of the injury. He hurt his bicep. Brandon Thompson hurt his knee.
Yeah.
And again, he went out, but you don't know what it is.
We haven't seen him.
No.
We haven't seen him since.
Right.
And so we'll do some more digging on that and hopefully have some answers on that.
And that's
guys.
A pretty big one. While Devin still got a chance to play, and it was a feel good story that Devin got to play. Brandon Thompson's been good, and you're playing him a lot of snaps because you're not playing Geno a lot of snaps.
Now, all of a sudden, you've got to amp Geno right back up immediately because he's got to get beyond the 60% that he's played the first 2 weeks, and he's got to get back up in the 80% range if you're going to be talking about no Brandon Thompson to help back him up. You know, Devin still, for
and they were
the story, is not anywhere near those guys.
No, and they were fortunate Sunday that they could play their nickel group somewhat up front a lot of times where you didn't have to have Geno in the game.
Well, and they have Gilberry and Gathers that move inside a lot.
Yeah, but that's a lot of times out of the nickel stuff. But
but
when you're going to your standard stuff trying to stop teams from running the football, you're going to need Geno in there a lot more snaps.
Yeah, Brandon Thompson was a big part of that. And all of a sudden, you're wondering where Christo Bielucchini went as well, who's now in Baltimore. So, you know, a lot of things happening there. Let's talk fantasy games.
Let's do it.
Let's talk fantasy for all our favorite fantasy football listeners. Of course, we've got our contest. which enters week two. And I'm happy to say
we're halfway home in this first quarter.
We're halfway home in the first quarter, which we need some redrafts.
Yes, we do. Badly.
Since you have been Jarvis Green Ellis on your team. And I have, although I have Ryan Hewitt and Marvin Jones and Tyler Eifert, I'm pretty sure I'll be
Not helping you.
Yeah, that's not helping me at all. I got two players carrying me.
None of us have B. Tate, although that's really not going to help you much either. But
yeah, no. Well, he had a big catch.
He did have a big catch.
So I have Giovanni Bernard and Jeremy Hill in this game. Yeah, that is a deadly combo right now. So I got 23 out of Gio and 15 out of Jeremy Hill in our jacked up scoring system that we invented ourselves. You got 14 out of Mohamed Sanu. Two from Jermaine Gresham, who's always good
that's
for two.
Good. That's good. That's a good start.
And four from Dane Sonsenbacher. That's the offensive stats.
I'm a defensive guy.
You're a defensive guy. Terrence Newman and George Iloka absolutely
my guys.
Carried you. Two picks from Iloka, plus the pass breakups. And then you get Terrence Newman with a bunch of pass breakups and led the team in tackles. And he was all over the place.
Yeah, see, he was really good.
Carlos Dunlap with sacks and PBUs, even though they weren't in the scorebook.
Yeah, somehow he did not get credited for a pass
Carlos
breakup.
Had
when
an
those
unbelievable
of you,
play.
Those of you listening, I'm guessing you obviously watched the game.
Yeah.
There's not an ounce of doubt in my. You know, I can occasionally miss a play because I'm writing or I'm tweeting, and same for all of us. But we all saw him drop into coverage and knock a pass down. Did
he
we
did.
Not?
Yeah, okay. I saw it.
All right, I'm making sure that
was
right.
Not in the book, but we gave it to him because we don't care. We do whatever we want here.
Pro Football Focus gave it to him, too, so we'll give them a little credit for that.
We'll give them some credit. But at the end of the day, for this particular week, I did score one more point than you, 67. Although that doesn't matter because we're soccer. We're like soccer style. We're aggregates. So wins don't really matter. It's all about your aggregate goals.
Will I get relegated?
You might. So because of your just demolishing of me in week one.
Yes.
I am still down 14 points to you in our four-game aggregate.
But I'm going to tell you, if I don't have AJ this weekend...
With no AJ.
Yeah.
No, our four-game aggregate, so it has to go through week five. Obviously.
That's correct. Okay, that's correct. But still...
You could, and I'll get Marvin Jones back for a game, possibly.
Yes, you could. That's exactly right. I'm going to... Here's the sad part. I'm not getting anything out of Ben Jarvis Green Ellis.
You really aren't.
No, I'm just not... It's just not going to happen.
It's just not going to happen. You've got to come to terms with that.
I've got to hope for a Sonsenbacher special, maybe. He had a couple of nice plays.
You know what? I think if you're looking around here, and actually someone asked me this question because, of course, I get more questions about help me with my fantasy team
of course, right.
than anything else. Where do you go if you're looking on the waiver wire in the Bengals? Where do you go? Because here's the thing. If Mohamed Sanu is available in your league, you should at least go get him for next
no
week.
No question.
For next week, he's going to be the number one guy there. He's a guy you need to go after. But outside of – he's not a long-term investment because all of a sudden, boom, you only get that one game out of him. And then week five,
right.
It's AJ and Marvin Jones are back, and all of a sudden Mohamed Sanu is one of three guys.
It's funny, though. I would tell you, and I did this in my league. I drafted Jeremy Hill in one of my fantasy leagues. And I actually started him yesterday. He's one of those guys that even though you know Gio's going to get X number of touches, if the matchup is right for him, you're good because he's going to get his 17 to 18 touches. We saw they're not afraid to run him down by the goal line. He got a chance to get one of those, got a touchdown. I mean, he got me some pretty good points yesterday.
Yeah.
And I may not be afraid to play him this coming Sunday against Tennessee.
Jeremy,
and
he's probably available in a lot of leagues.
Yeah, yeah.
So Jeremy Hill would not be, I mean, as we discussed earlier, his carries are only going to grow as the year goes along and they get more confidence in him and they try to take a little bit of the beating off of Gio. He'd be a nice pickup.
I can see a game plan this Sunday against Tennessee if AJ's not available, much like this last game plan. For 20
Dallas
times?
Ran for 220
exactly.
yards against Tennessee. DeMarco Murray went buck
right.
wild. If you don't think that Hugh Jackson's not planning on giving him a steady dose of the running game after watching that, then you're crazy.
And based on what you've got personnel group-wise. I mean, without having A.J. Green, your chances are pretty good. You're going to run the football a whole lot and get those two running backs as many touches as you can again.
Yeah, and rely on your defense to shut down Jake Locker,
exactly.
which has
should,
been done before.
Should happen. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's where we're at. So we've still got – now, what did We still have debated. I thought last week, didn't we say that we want it to be just a random song that we pick for the other one to sing? So there's no fight songing.
I thought fight song was interesting just because we went to different colleges.
We
and,
did, although you've already sort of owned me in that battle since my Bobcats stink at football. Again,
yes, they
and
do.
Kentucky.
And my Kentucky team beat your Bobcat team.
Hey, your Kentucky team almost took down Joe Reedy's Florida Gators.
I know they did, and it was a sad ending to that one, by the way.
It is fairly sad for you.
Oh, well.
Are you don't want to bemoan Kentucky's loss here?
No, well, the only thing I'll bemoan is the one defensive back who somehow had his hands on an interception that then ricocheted off his shoulder pad right into DeMarco Robinson's hands, and he ran it in for a touchdown. I'll bemoan that. And I will bemoan the officials letting the play clock run down to zero in overtime and then allowing Florida to snap a play and score a touchdown on fourth down. I'll bemoan that.
That's bemoanable.
Is that close enough?
Yeah, that's okay. Bemoanable. That's fair. I mean, I will bemoan.
And the fact that I was literally 1 year out of college, Paul, the last time Kentucky beat Florida.
Ooh, that's a long time.
There's my
ago.
Old guy moment of the
there
day.
There it is. How long ago is that? Let's bring in the music. There
1986, Paul. My first year out of college. I graduated in 85.
Tell me about how great it was that year.
It was great because Bill Ransdell completed 20 of 23 passes for about 140 yards. Kentucky beat Emmitt Smith and the Florida Gators 10-3.
Emmitt Smith. Was beaten by your freshman year Kentucky
and Emmitt
Wildcats.
Smith's been out of the NFL for how long now,
A long time. He's been not only out of the NFL, he's also been kicked out of broadcasting since then.
That's
far back we're going.
That is true. So there you go.
It did take a while. I'm glad we got the skinny dates himself, old man moment of the week. That was a nice one. It's not quite as exciting as it was when I found out your love for long division and refusing to use calculators, but I like this. I like this one all the same.
There you go.
So we've got that. We've got taken care of. We told you earlier in the podcast some of the things we got going on. But keep an eye for that. As we mentioned, Jason DeMonch this Tuesday, and then Marvin Lewis the Tuesday after that. Even though it's a bye week, we're still going to keep plugging away. Beyond the Stripes at Moreline Logger House. Had a good crowd out last time.
Yep.
Everyone learned that I am terrible at flicking paper footballs.
Mike Nugent was a great sport with that.
Mike was great.
And then he got into it. He got real competitive with it.
Are we responsible for Mike Nugent's performance on
Sunday?
I've
actually thought about that, believe it or not.
Did he hurt himself? Did he hurt his finger flicking the paper footballs or threw off his whole balance?
Well, then remember I asked him the one time if he kicked it soccer style that way, and I asked him what kickers
He was thinking about the Google Axe is what he was. He was thinking about the Google Axe we were talking about.
Google Axe.
Google Axe?
Not Google's the search engine. Google Axe.
Google
Axe. Pete and Charlie.
All right,
The original soccer style kickers in the NFL.
All right, Pete and Charlie Gogolak. Sorry, I forgot. Mike Nugent was fantastic, but yeah, so come on down. We have a good time every week, and that'll be the case as well. Well, at least this week, we'll have a good time. I don't think I'll make Marvin Lewis kick paper footballs, so maybe we should.
Yeah, we got to come up with some kind of idea there.
Oh God, that's a hard one.
Yeah,
that's a hard one. It's not as much of a joking show when Marvin shows up.
That's all right. As long as it's informative and the fans enjoy it, that's what matters.
That's what really matters. So we got. But
I love the silliness that we've done at the end of shows.
There is a ridiculous amount of silliness. There's no doubt about it. I mean the Adam Jones week. I still don't even know what the hell was going on there. I had lost all control. Complete derailment.
I say you're the moderator and host of said show. You're supposed to be in control.
Yeah, no. I think we're at our best when no one has control. So I kind of like it when it just spirals.
Because like a Monty Python's Flying Circus?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I'm going for. The more chaotic, the better as far as I'm concerned. Let's
have rubber chickens dancing around. And
hey, if we had rubber chicken budget, I'm
there
cashing in.
There you go.
I would be in on a rubber chicken budget. All right, so let's go out of here. Let's see. What do we got?
We got to have something countryish, don't we? With Tennessee,
yeah, it
coming
is
in?
Tennessee. A little country. I don't know what's a good country song that we could go with this week.
That's actually a good question. I'm not a huge country. The country genre is kind of out of my realm.
It's out of my realm a bit too. I only know some of the really old Alabama Travis Tritt. I don't know any. There's
what some dream.
Some T. Tritt.
That's tremendous.
I pulled out some T. Tritt on him. I don't really know a whole lot of country music. We could always just.
You know what? You know what we could do just for this. We could do some Billy Ray Cyrus, a little achy breaky heart, just because it was so bad back in the day.
Oh yeah, I'll do that. I'll go.
And with all these injuries for the Bengals, it's kind of breaking everybody's heart.
Everybody's achy and breaky.
Yeah.
All over the place. So we can do that.
There you go.
And you know, and his daughter just turned out to be such an upstanding citizen.
Oh, no question.
That it's all just really worked out for Billy Ray. All right, so Billy Ray Cyrus, thank you for joining us here on the podcast. Also, thank you to, of course, JoeSpado.com. And remind you all, every Tuesday the podcast comes out. So make sure you always keep popping back to the site. And make sure you get the Bengals app. You can listen to the podcast on the Bengals app. So right where you have all the other information from us, you can listen to the podcast right off that. You can get it in Google Play. You can get it in iTunes if you want it there. But I think the easiest way to do it is just go to the app. So do that. And thanks, Billy Ray, again. And I guess we'll talk to you next week. We'll
just don't think he'd understand. And if you tell